5. Within a week of Dungy's firing by the Bucks, the owner of the Indianapolis Colts left an impassioned 15-minute message on his answering machine. The Colts, despite having one of the NFL's best quarterbacks, Peyton Manning, had just finished a dreadful season. The owner needed help. He was tired of losing, he said. Dungy moved to Indianapolis and became head coach. He immediately started implementing the same basic game plan, remaking the Colts' routines and teaching players to use old cues to build reworked habits. In his first season, the Colts went 10-6 and qualified for the playoffs. The next season, they went 12-4 and came within one game of the Super Bowl. Dungy's celebrity grew. Newspaper and television profiles appeared around the country. Fans flew in so they could visit the church Dungy attended. His sons became fixtures in the Colts' locker room and on the sidelines. In 2005, Jamie, his eldest boy, graduated from high school and went to college in Florida. Even as Dungy's successes mounted, however, the same troubling patterns emerged. The Colts would play a season of disciplined winning football and then, under playoff pressure, choke. Belief is the biggest part of success in professional football, Dungy told me. The team wanted to believe, but when things got really tense, they went back to their comfort zones and old habits. The Colts finished the 2005 regular season with 14 wins and 2 losses, the best record in its history. Then, tragedy struck. 3 days before Christmas, Tony Dungy's phone rang in the middle of the night. His wife answered and handed him the receiver, thinking it was one of his players. There was a nurse on the line. Dungy's son Jamie had been brought into the hospital earlier in the evening, she said, with compression injuries on his throat. His girlfriend had found him hanging in his apartment, a belt around his neck. Paramedics had rushed him to the hospital, but efforts at revival were unsuccessful. He was gone. A chaplain flew to spend Christmas with the family. "Life will never be the same again," the chaplain told them. "But you won't always feel like you do right now." A few days after the funeral, Dungy returned to the sidelines. He needed something to distract himself, and his wife and team encouraged him to go back to work. "I was overwhelmed by their love and support," he later wrote. "As a group, we had always leaned on each other in difficult times. I needed them now more than ever." The team lost their first playoff game, concluding their season. But in the aftermath of watching Dungy during this tragedy, something changed, one of his players from that period told me. "We had seen Coach through this terrible thing, and all of us wanted to help him somehow." It is simplistic, even cavalier, to suggest that a young man's death can have an impact on football games. Dungy has always said that nothing is more important to him than his family. But in the wake of Jamie's passing, as the Colts started preparing for the next season, something shifted, his players say. The team gave in to Dungy's vision of how football should be played in a way they hadn't before. They started to believe. "I had spent a lot of previous seasons worrying about my contract and salary," said one player who, like others, spoke about that period on the condition of anonymity. "When Coach came back after the funeral, I wanted to give him everything I could to take away his hurt. I kind of gave myself to the team." "Some men like hugging each other," another player told me. "I don't. I haven't hugged my sons in a decade. But after Coach came back, I walked over and I hugged him as long as I could, because I wanted him to know that I was there for him." After the death of Dungy's son, the team started playing differently. A conviction emerged among players about the strength of Dungy's strategy. In practices and scrimmages leading up to the start of the 2006 season, the Colts played tight, precise football. Most football teams aren't really teams. They're just guys who work together, a third player from that period told me. But we became a team. It felt amazing. Coach was the spark, but it was about more than him. After he came back, it felt like we really believed in each other, like we knew how to play together in a way we didn't before. For the Colts, a belief in their team, in Dungy's tactics, and their ability to win began to emerge out of tragedy. But just as often, a similar belief can emerge without any kind of adversity. In a 1994 Harvard study that examined people who had radically changed their lives, for instance, researchers found that some people had remade their habits after a personal tragedy, such as a divorce or a life-threatening illness. Others changed after they saw a friend go through something awful, the same way that Dungy's players watched him struggle. Just as frequently, however, there was no tragedy that preceded people's transformations. Rather, they changed because they were embedded in social groups that made change easier. One woman said her entire life shifted when she signed up for a psychology class and met a wonderful group. "It opened a Pandora's box," the woman told researchers. "I could not tolerate the status quo any longer. I had changed in my core." Another man said that he found new friends among whom he could practice being gregarious. "When I do make the effort to overcome my shyness, I feel that it is not really me acting, that it's someone else," he said. But by practicing with his new group, it stopped feeling like acting. He started to believe he wasn't shy, and then, eventually, he wasn't anymore. When people join groups where change seems possible, the potential for that change to occur becomes more real. For most people who overhaul their lives, there are no seminal moments or life-altering disasters. There are simply communities, sometimes of just one other person, who make change believable. One woman told researchers her life transformed after a day spent cleaning toilets, and after weeks of discussing with the rest of the cleaning crew whether she should leave her husband. Change occurs among other people, one of the psychologists involved in the study, Todd Heatherton, told me. It seems real when we can see it in other people's eyes. The precise mechanisms of belief are still little understood. No one is certain why a group encountered in a psychology class can convince a woman that everything is different, or why Dungy's team came together after their coach's son passed away. Plenty of people talk to friends about unhappy marriages and never leave their spouses. Lots of teams watch their coaches experience adversity and never gel. But we do know that for habits to permanently change, people must believe that change is feasible. The same process that makes AA so effective, the power of a group to teach individuals how to believe, happens whenever people come together to help one another change. Belief is easier when it occurs within a community.